Hello and welcome. This is Jason McKenna from Verulam Sport 92.6 FM. Today we are joined by Gary Bloom. Thank you very much for joining us today, Gary.
You're very welcome.
So I'm going to go straight in with my first question here. So is it becoming a norm for Premier League teams to employ sports psychologists, or is it still a growing area that teams need to look into?
Well, that's a great question to start with, because sports psychology has been around since the mid-1970s, early 1980s, which began in America. And it's kind of grown, where sports psychology has been all about performance and quality of performance. What is beginning to happen now, and this is very much where I work in the industry, is what you might call more personal psychology. That is, we're looking at the problems that exist with the players, which are barriers to success on the pitch. So we're not necessarily concentrating on what you might call traditional sports psychology issues like confidence, resilience, mentalization, and so on and so forth. I'm looking at more things like how do you remove the barriers, the personal barriers that we all have in our lives, the problems, the difficult relationships. How do we put those to one side to become the best version of ourselves when we do our job and this circumstance when we're playing a sport?
Well, that is fascinating stuff, and it seems very important as well. But would you say that teams regard this as an important part of their backroom staff now, a sports psychologist? Is it a key member of a team?
That's a difficult question because all football clubs are very, very different in their management and makeup and style. And I would say that it's still a taboo for many players to accept they might have personal issues that need resolving before they can actually give of their best. So in terms of a personal psychology, or my branch of it would be sports psychotherapy, I only know three in the whole country. And the reason that might surprise you, but the reason that is very few managements of football clubs would feel as comfortable as the one I work for, allowing somebody like me to have free rein and access to first team players. I think there's a lot of taboo in those clubs. They find it very, very difficult to allow psychologists to get close up and personal with their stars. And I understand why that would be. And there's no criticism from me to those individuals, because if I were to upset a first teamer and he said, look, I don't want that person in the club, otherwise I'm not playing, the manager has got a problem. And therefore it's a lot of pressure on somebody like me to make sure that we keep good relationships with first team players. If that breaks down, there is a problem.
So when you said that it was only three teams, is that three teams in the Premier League or in the whole of the country?
Three teams in the whole of the country.
Goodness me. I mean, it seems like it needs to be more embraced in clubs going forward.
I think other sports have embraced it much quicker, and I can think of two sports that I'm involved with, cricket and rugby union. I think they see the value of that. I mean, sports psychology is probably an umbrella of which sports psychotherapy would come underneath, but realistically, where we are looking at performance, I think a lot of club management would be happy to see somebody like myself as improving on the field performance. But personal issues, just less so. They see them, I think, as something that the individual player should get sorted out. And, of course, there is a mechanism involved for doing that. So players can self-refer through the PFA, their union, and seek out counsellors and therapists. But the way I'm doing it, actually embedded in a football club, being there in the staff canteen, being there on the training ground, is relatively new.
Well, I suppose you mentioned the word performance, and what I'd like to do now is talk about, I'm sure you're adept with the phrase bounce-back ability, which Ian Dowie made popular, but I want to look into how a big team like Liverpool and Man City have just faced with having a single loss or maybe a few on the run. How do they kind of combat a downward spiral and maybe make the negative a positive?
Well, again, that's a really interesting question, because the human mind often looks for patterns when we try to work out what's going to happen. And there's no reason why Liverpool should lose two on the bounce than three on the bounce or stop that run. It's the belief system has to be inside the players, and now we're moving more into the role of sports psychology, of believing that that game is finished and all over and done with. And there is no more likelihood that it's going to rain tomorrow as it's rained today. But people believe this stuff. They believe that because we lost last week, we're more likely to lose next week. Well, that's a fallacy. That's called maladaptive thinking. So what you have to do is say to the players, there is a final point. There is a point where you have to rule a line underneath the last result. You go away. You look at the video evidence. You relate that back to the players. And you try to fix what was wrong. And then you try to adapt your style to the team that you'll be playing next. And the two games have to be seen as completely different. And this is the work I do on the sports psychology side, because I work in both areas, where I say to the players, whatever happened yesterday has nothing to do with today. That is very, very hard to do as a sports player, but every time that you start a game, you have to believe that. For example, if you say, the work I do with players is, if you concede a goal, it should be just the same as conceding a throw-in. You have to forget about it and move on.
Well, that's an excellent way to approach it. And I think another team that I'd like to talk about is kind of Man City. And breaking habits is one of the things that you talked about recently in reference to the sigmoid curve. And my question to you is, kind of, do you think Man City were almost, as you said, in a comfort phase? And maybe these recent spate of not so good results put them in a state of discomfort, and if anything, this could spur them on to greatness, onto the business end of the season.
Well, I think we should explain what the sigmoid curve is. The sigmoid curve exists and was invented as a business tool, but can be taken into sports clubs. And it's a curve of education and performance, where you educate a group of people, and then you often find that if they're educated and you put the right things in place, you have a growth, a very sharp growth. Imagine a graph with a curve that goes upwards, a very steep learning curve, where your success rate is very, very strong. And the belief is inside business, inside sports clubs, that's the time to make subtle changes. Because as human beings, we get very comfortable knowing that what we are doing and what we have done works, and we tend just to relax a little bit. It's human nature. So why often try and impose or suggest to the management of the team where I am is that is the time to make subtle changes in training regimes, subtle changes in rotating the team, etc., etc. Now, Man City do that quite a lot anyway, and I'm sure they are already thinking about bringing top players in, even when they're winning. So there are sports psychologists knocking around who I'm sure would be saying to Man City, look, this is the time to make changes. The problem is in the sigmoid curve, if you don't make changes, inevitably that rate of growth and success will level off, and then what you tend to find is if it levels off, it begins to decline. I often think the inverse is true. Maybe in the decline is not the time to change. You go back to some of the basic things that you were doing when you were successful, and then when you pick up the success again, then you make changes. Because nobody wants to reinvent everything when it's on the way down.
Did I go? I've been listening really intently. This is really fascinating stuff. I've got one quick question based on that point you've been making, because it really kind of fascinates me. The great thing, I guess, about that pattern and noticing things within the general kind of movement is, you know, how to kind of align and progress. But from your point of view, in your particular role, How are the challenges with what I guess you might call anomalies, the kind of players who are by their nature mavericks, who maybe the kind of rare geniuses that each team maybe has, but sometimes managers find difficult to get pulling their weight? I mean, I don't want to name names, but Ozil, for instance, in this era, maybe a Letizia from the past, a Hoddle. How do you kind of, in your role, again, these that go against the grain, manage and assist the overall picture, which is the smooth running of a football club?
Yeah, that's a tough one because, I mean, the New Zealand All Blacks had, I can't really say it on the radio, they had a rule about there is they had a rule that they had no idiots. They put it a bit more bluntly than that in their team. That was the rule number one: no idiots. And I can see why they would do that, because they would see those idiotic players as something that went countercultural to what they were trying to achieve. I think it's a bit more nuanced than that for me, whereby I tend to think of something called the trouble-to-talent ratio. That if you're an outrageously talented player like a Cantona, like a Hoddle, is what you're offering to the team or the club so exceptional that they are prepared to put up with whatever you're bringing alongside that? Now, the other way of looking at it is, as well as trouble-to-talent ratio, and I think that can work in any organisation. You know, you always got that difficult bloke in the office, but gone, you know, he gets the best sales or whatever. So you're probably going to keep him because his talent is there, even though he might bring a bit of trouble. I think the other thing that is really crucial to understand is that person, is that individual, when you look at them, are they a me individual or are they a we individual? Now, as a me individual, they're looking at more personal issues. Why? What makes them tick? Is this about them? Is being in a football club all about their personal glory? Is it a narcissistic act? Is it all about self-glory? And that is a me individual. Or is the individual who can be highly individualistic, a we individual? Can he map in? Is he part of the team or the club? And I think it's very easy to see the two.
Well, I would say that you have shown your talent here today, Gary. And I would like to say thank you very much. If people want to learn more about you or your projects that you're supporting at the moment, where should they visit, Gary?
Yeah, I'd be delighted to hear from anybody. I get a lot of requests from people who are studying psychology and sports psychology. If you just Google me, Gary Bloom, you can probably find me also through my radio show on Talk Sport, but also on something called the Counselling Directory. If anybody wants to know more and wants to get in contact with me, I'd be delighted to hear from them.
Well, thank you very much for your time, Gary.
All the best. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.